It's Dig Deep on KAXE KBXE, also available through iTunes. I'm Heidi Holton with Chuck Marone and Aaron Brown. We're looking at the rural-urban divide. We talked about culture in our last segment, but now we want to move into politics. We are just so fresh off of this midterm election where this was a huge topic. Where do we begin talking politics here? It's a lot.
Well, I think let's look at the big picture and the national scene. You know, we talked about it many times on our show here, the notion of whether or not there would be a quote-unquote blue wave of Democratic victories that would sweep the nation, or whether there would be a red wall, so to speak, where the conservative Republicans would stop the enthusiasm for President Trump in his base, would stop this blue wave, and maybe even prevent Democrats from taking Congress or the Senate. Well, what we saw was...
I think the answer is yes.
The answer is yes. because in places that are predisposed to the modern Democratic Party, namely cities and suburbs, there was an enormous blue wave. Republicans were swept out of places that we never thought Republicans would lose. Orange County, California, the entire state of New Jersey, various places around the country where Republicans were routed out of these wealthy suburbs where we thought that they would never lose. Minnesota here, the 3rd District and the 2nd District, places that were solidly Republican for generations, where Democrats had sudden success and in some places just brained the Republican Party. On the flip side, In rural America, in exurban America, where Republicans have been doing well and where Donald Trump did very well 2 years ago in 2016, Republicans continued to do well. In fact, despite Trump's relatively low approval rating and the idea that there'd be a rebound of the Democratic Party in places like where we live here in the 8th District, we found that places that voted for Trump overwhelmingly came out and voted for Republican candidates up and down the ticket. And in the 8th District, Pete Stauber won the election, which we had conceded was a probability.
In some ways, it became more red.
Yeah, and you can look at particularly places where Stauber did well in the exurban areas. He not only kept all the Republican precincts, but he expanded the Republican margins in a lot of places. And there were a few places, Democratic places, that shrunk. Even the Iron Range, we wondered how it would go. Radinovich carried the Iron Range, as you would expect, but it was a marginally tighter race there than Rick Nolan had in the previous election. And yet, down in Duluth, in the big city, the urban center of the 8th District, what did we see? An expansion of the blue, the Democratic vote totals. And I think it just kind of shows that districts... And then we saw the 1st District down in southern Minnesota also go Republican, narrowly, but... It was a district where Tim Walz, who is now our governor-elect, used to win by large margins for a swing district. He was winning by 5, 6, 7, 8 points in different elections that he was in office. He almost got beat last time, then he runs for governor, and his successor or his Democratic Party fell short in 2018. So Minnesota, despite the blue wave nationally, is dead even. We were 5-3 Democratic at the start, and now we're 5-3 different places. There's a lot more red on the map, but there's a lot more people voting Democratic in the urban areas. So it was some of both. And the Democrats did fairly well nationally, but only because lots of people live in the suburbs, and they did well in the suburbs.
Right. I would like to kind of get into the policy ramifications of this a little bit. Because I think the map is clear. I mean, the trends are clear, and they've been with us for a while now.
I should mention, it was true in the state legislature as well. What I just described carried into the state legislature as well, where the Democrats now hold the Minnesota House on the back of enormous gains in the suburbs.
And I think if you're stepping back looking at this, and you're a Republican strategist, you have to be a little bit nervous. Not because you're wrong on the issues, or you got bad candidates, or da-da-da-da-da, which maybe you do have those issues. But the thing you've got to be worried about is that cities right now, in a macro sense, are gaining population. Suburbs, especially inner-ring suburbs, are gaining population. Exurbs and rural areas are generally losing population. And so just by sheer demographics, if you're going to be the party of rural and exurban, you're going to struggle. And what you see is even when, you know, you can take George W. Bush in 2000, you can take Donald Trump in 2016, even when you win major elections, you're not winning the popular vote. You're losing, and the Senate, Democrats are really angry right now because they are like, we won the popular vote for the Senate. Well, there's no such thing as a popular vote in the Senate. You can win California by a gazillion votes to one and you win two seats, and you can win, you can lose North Dakota by one vote and you lost that seat. There's no popular vote for the Senate. But when you look at the numbers, it looks like in the future, Republicans are going to have a hard time taking back the House and would be able to dominate for a long time, or at least be very competitive in the Senate, just because of how we've established our representative republic to have both a population component and a geography component. And with the population shifting across the geography, especially the way it's concentrating, it kind of magnifies those kind of two different power bases.
And there were some obvious things that Democrats had hoped for that they were disappointed that they didn't get. Things like the Texas Senate race, where a prominent Democrat was doing very well in the polls and thought maybe they could get it. The Georgia governor's race, the Florida races. But those are all places where Republicans won by a little bit, but that they used to win by a whole
ton.
They
won by hanging on.
Yeah, barely hung on in some of these places. And it's easy to see, well, okay, Republicans are still going to be favored in those places for now. But the demographics underneath it are changing. And so we're going to see kind of that nightmare scenario that so many people talk about with like the Electoral College and the Senate, where you have the blowouts in the big electoral vote population states for one side, and then these other races for the smaller states that still have an Electoral College kind of base because of the at least two per plus the one. So a tiny, tiny state gets three electoral votes, and a big state works out a little differently. But, you know, we're watching this actually happen, which is something that they thought might happen when they drew it up. And that's exactly why they drew it up. And we've talked about that, is to provide a balance. It's going to be really interesting. I want to point out one thing about the politics. You were mentioning how there's some policy implications. I'll just take my party, the Democratic Farmer Labor Party, as an example. Democrats just took the state House of Representatives. What's interesting is how they did it. Because, for instance, when they lost the House, one of the things that happened is they lost districts 5A and 5B, for instance. These newer, well, they weren't always called this, but Bemidji and Grand Rapids area, Itasca County. These are places that had been Democratic for a long, long time. Brainerd area has been Democratic in the past and had solid veteran DFLers that held office indefinitely for many years. It looks like the Republicans not only have taken those areas, but are starting to hold them with some margin.
Right.
There was a strong effort to take out.
And I'll say, you know, with all respect to the people who represent me, with not like spectacular candidates in
no,
some ways.
No, it's clear that the people are voting that way because they feel that way, not because they have just
some charismatic personality stepped into the
void. I don't want to get into names, but
I'll say.
But there are some candidates who got in, you know, just because there was a wave of support for their party, and now they're in, and it looks like they're
set. Now they can keep the seat.
They can keep the seat now because they've got the seniority and all this, which is exactly what happened in a lot of Democratic districts for a long time.
Absolutely. Yeah,
not necessarily the best candidate, but they had the right party designation. So there was thinking, oh, if you're going to take the House back, you got to take Grand Rapids back. You got to take Bemidji back. And they're going to get Bemidji back by 8 votes. They're going to do a recount. John Purcell got the seat back barely. He's going to be the most vulnerable guy in 2 years just because of the 8-vote margin. And here in Grand Rapids, they didn't get the seat back. Sandy Lehman kept the seat for the Republicans, considered supposed to be one of the pivotal. I thought it would be the decider of whether or not Democrats got the House. Guess what? They lost it, and they still carried the House by margins because of that suburban support. Winning in places that they never thought possible. Plymouth, they won Plymouth. I never thought it possible. So what's happening now, and I can see this happening in the caucus of the Democratic Farmer Labor Party, is you have a makeup of representatives that is unlike any Democrats have had before. The Republican Party has all these rural districts that they never used to have before. And you know, the Republican Party, at least when I was growing up in the DFL party structure, believing DFL ideas, the idea was that those Edina Republicans, those Egan Republicans with their money, were going to come and get our economic well-being as working people. well, now the rural areas are held by Republicans, and there's a the range still has
that narrative doesn't work anymore.
The narrative doesn't work anymore, and that's showing up now in how people think about they think about rich people, they think about Democrats right. now, and that's not accurate for how Republicans raise their money, but nobody raises their money from people; they all get it from rich people, and so there's this co-option. But the DFL caucus is what I'm getting at is now more suburban and urban than ever.
Educated and white women, public employees unions, not blue collar worker unions, but mm-hmm. like public teachers, administrators, that kind yeah. of thing. These are the ones that have shifted.
The college educated group is now entirely Democratic.
Is Democratic.
I mean, not everyone. There are college educated Republicans. Let's make that clear. But it's right. like the proportion is enormous.
That's been the biggest shift.
And that's going to create a lot of issues for, like, for instance, the range Democrats are really worried now because they're going to go into a caucus where they're one of. They don't even hold the margin for flipping a vote.
They're
now.
Already becoming kind of marginalized at yeah. the legislature.
Yeah.
The range issues.
Which was happening anyway.
Right.
And but it's creating a situation where I think, like, I don't know if it's going to happen in 2 years, and I don't know if it's going to include the people we see in office now.
Right.
But at some point, some range Democrat's going to go, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm going to flip.
Right.
And that's how those seats might flip is the people saying, you know, I don't want to even talk about environmental issues. Here they are talking about environmental issues.
Not only talking about them, but demanding that I do.
Well, and then, you know, and passing legislation over their objection.
Right.
You know, and they can even vote against it. And the Democrats are still passing the legislation. And I'm not saying I'm sounding like a paranoid range Democrat.
No, but who's gonna
because
stand
I
up?
Don't feel that that's necessarily productive use of our time. But I'm just saying politically, this is how this is going to start to look.
Right.
And
here's the question I would have. You know, not like I'm a fan of the IRRRB in the sense mm-hmm. because it largely has been like a machine tool of the Democratic Party for mm-hmm. a while. In this part, who stands up for the IRRRB down at the legislature?
Well, it's always been Democrats.
But. What really you mm-hmm. you think that like new Edina or Plymouth mm-hmm. DFLer is going to be like, yeah, I want to make sure that this big entity up in the range has all this money to subsidize mining.
Meantime, mm-hmm. you've got the conservatives who truly believe in smaller government and things like this, looking at the same with the same knives out, different knives maybe, looking at different aspects of the problem, and you wonder how some of these unique. You know, it's almost like the range and the range political structure evolved as this strange creature in this weird evolutionary way.
Right.
And now that creature and all of its attributes that keep it alive is in a strange new world. And this new world is going to be tricky for the range and tricky for places that used to be Democratic but now are voting Republican but don't necessarily fit the Republican model of, you know, LGA. You know a lot about LGA, and you know LGA is going to be this weird issue now.
It's becoming very weird.
It's out in the rural areas, and you've got a lot of Republicans now forced to say, oh, maybe LGA is okay, you know, because our whole dang constituency requires LGA.
When your constituency is like the affluent suburbs who are sending money, you know, mm-hmm. sending money, not receiving money, it's a very different than when your constituent is all these cities that are wholly dependent
yeah.
on it. Yeah.
So you're seeing this weird thing where Republicans are suddenly going to be okay with LGA and Democrats are going to be open to new ideas, but... And maybe this is good. Maybe this is going to produce some interesting results, some interesting compromise. Maybe that's one of our segues to the next segment, talking about policy, because we either figure this out or the parties are going to rattle apart.
Yeah, although we've had, I mean, you know this better than I. You know, we've had these kind of cosmic shifts.
Yeah, realignment. Yeah, that's what this is realignment.
Right. And I think the one that's interesting to me, and I'm going to say this, not believing this, but having it be a statement that I've heard over and over again. I shouldn't even give it voice, but I will so we can discuss it. This notion that like the Republicans becoming the party of stupid. And it kind of goes, it's kind of the corollary of like all the educated, college educated, wealthy.
Democrats becoming the party of elite and all this.
And it's, I think that is the more I get into urban areas and the more I talk to people who are very partisan, it's one of those things that they like to say, mm-hmm. right? And even in rural areas, the people that I know that maybe call themselves conservative but can't vote Republican, and I put myself in that camp sometimes, you know, like mm-hmm. I've said, I didn't vote for Donald Trump. You know, I have a hard time voting for some Republicans at times. The feedback that you get is, where's the policy people? Where are the ideas? Mm-hmm. And I'll put this out there. I always said in the 90s and the early 2000s, my two favorite politicians were Paul Wellstone and Newt Gingrich. Now, you're not going to get two people who are, yeah. you know, are going to vote the same on anything.
No.
But the thing I liked about them both is they both had a certain moxie and attitude. They both had things they believed in, and they both were like fonts of ideas.
They actually proposed things.
They actually proposed things, and they mm-hmm. didn't propose things because it was popular or would get them somewhere in their they were like, here's a good idea. Let's try this. Let's do this. Here's how we can solve this problem in a unique mm-hmm. way. And I admired both of them for that capacity. I see the Democratic Party being a party of becoming very captured by what I'm going to call like a populist socialism kind of mantra, and Republicans being captured by this populist Trumpism kind of mantra. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I find in common with both of them is that they're both not very intellectual.
Yeah.
The one pretends to be because, you know, we got science on our side and all this, and we got the yeah. college professors mm-hmm. and all this, but they're both like very dogmatic and dumb. That's my word in terms of like their approach to nuance and policy. And I feel like it doesn't bode well for our future.
Well, and that's why I say that maybe the hope is in that as things change, there are opportunities. There are opportunities for different kinds of people to emerge and propose. At some point, we're going to run into these, and then we're going to run into it in Minnesota, and we're going to see it on the federal level, too. At some point, and we've seen the chaos over government shutdowns, trying to get a budget passed when people are at an impasse and absolutely refuse to blink because of the politics of the moment. At some point, we might run into the possibility of some third way maybe being possible because of that, because of these weird new, like maybe you've got suburban Democrats who do something you wouldn't expect. Maybe you've got rural Republicans who might do something you wouldn't expect because of their situation. Maybe you're going to see leadership emerge from some of these new legislators that are being elected, whether it's a relatively conservative Democrat like the new state rep, Dave Lislegard from Aurora, who was elected really because of his connection to the mining issue and that issue in his constituency. Maybe he goes maverick on some things. Maybe Republicans looking to keep their seats in the suburbs, one of the few ones that survived, maybe they do something different. Maybe Pat Garofalo down in Farmington does something a little different as he has in the past, when these rubber hits the road kind of moments happen. But we need leadership, I think. So I think we're seeing the triumph, and I've said this before, the triumph of marketing, not just in marketing, but in politics. You know, you're loyal to your brand. You wear your Chevy hat or your Ford hat. You put the guy on your truck bumper peeing on the other guy bumper sticker, which is a rural reference,
right?
For those of you for those of you listening who aren't rural.
Yeah, it's the Minnesota version of truck
nuts. If you don't like something like Democrats or Ford or whatever, right, you get yourself a sticker of a guy peeing on that thing and you put it on your truck.
Right.
But that's kind of what we've become politically too, either you fly your flag, your colors, and then you make sure to register your disdain for the opposition. It just feels like we're stuck in an era where that is the way we handle things. And we're seeing that it doesn't really work. We're seeing that Nancy Pelosi is going to be elected the Speaker of the House, but she's got to go through a whole rigmarole because of her new more liberal representation or her new more suburban representation, where people are worried about what they have to tell their voters about what they did. And so we're kind of working our way around all that stuff to get to the obvious conclusion. And it's just like passing a budget. We need a budget. We need a military. We need all of our government programs to work. And I'm just really, and this is the last thing I'll say, maybe this is a segue, like healthcare, for instance, which is like one of these top issues that have gone one way or the other, either for or against the new healthcare laws. it just feels like we're sitting on the opportunity to actually do something. Republicans don't like the current law. They want to change it. Democrats want different things. Maybe there's a way to reopen the compact and discuss these things, but right now everybody's trying to protect their base, and that makes it really hard to actually change the law for the better.
It could also just be that instead of some grand compromise, rural areas just get poorer and urban areas just do what they want because they'll have all the wealth and
here's the thing,
all the power.
That's what is happening.
That's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, and that's the trajectory. So we as a rural area have some incentive to try to spur some real discussion about this because it's our butts if it doesn't change.
Amen.
In our next segment, we will continue talking rural-urban divide solutions.